State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy is joining us for our weekly Tacky Talk podcast. How's it going, Tacky?
Hey, good to see you, Joe. Happy to do this from home this time.
Yes, that's right. You were in the office last time, and since last we talked, we had a snowstorm, although a little one.
There's a little one, but enough to surprisingly for me, have a quite a bit of coat of ice underneath the snow. And I thought it was going to be more fluffier than it was because news reports were saying that the snow was fluffier on the state. And no, it wasn't as fluffy. It wasn't along the water. One of the fun things about living by the water is you get that salt water effect in the snow, and it sometimes inhibits ability from being fluffier.
That's right. You get the slush instead of the fluff.
Yeah, it's a lot uneven because the way the wind blows near my house off the marsh, so I get some higher density in certain parts. Let's put it this way: depending on where the wind was blowing, it doesn't have to blow a lot actually by the water. So some certain sections have like a much lower side, and which ones are much a higher mound. And it's also reflected on the car where you can see the, slightly uneven coating. But yeah, but it was frozen over and underneath the snowpack. I was actually a little surprised.
Yes, and not melting anytime soon because now we're in the polar vortex.
Yeah, I think it's like the second polar vortex of the year. I mean, it was down into single digits overnight, and I'm hoping people are staying safe and warm. And obviously, Illinois encourage energy conservation because energy prices are higher when there is colder because there's higher demand. And the heating system gets priority over electrical generation in Massachusetts. So the natural gas will get a guaranteed heat and will buy power from out of state while the natural gas plants near us are going to re-divert their natural gas into the heating system, or essentially the pipe system. So obviously this is temporary, but thankfully Quincy is an aggregated electric program. We participate in an aggregate program. You're not going to see a fluctuation in electric bill other than some likely fluctuations in your distribution rate given the high usage you're using. But thankfully, we should be pretty steady because the city has a bulk rate collectively.
Right. How is the state's energy assistance program funding this year, Tacky?
I'm trying to remember exactly how much is in the system. It generally averages about $2 billion every three for a 3 year program. So, if people are interested in mass save, I strongly encourage it. As I said in my last podcast, it's not for everybody. I mean, you should think about carefully the long-term costs of things like solar panels and heat pumps and things like that. Obviously, windows are very much encouraged. Windows technology keeps changing every year. It's not like the windows I have here, energy efficient windows, but they're like 20 plus years old. So obviously the technology is very different now, but the windows are in very good shape. I'm no interest in removing them yet. But something for you all to consider. And of course, I tell folks, definitely get your free light bulbs a minimum. Mass save when you do the energy efficiency auditing of your home. So you're paying for it through your electric bill and gas bill already, but you might as well take advantage of it as often as you can. I don't remember what the schedule was. I think you can only get an audit so many years,
Okay.
X number of years. But I very much encourage that. And obviously, I'm not telling you to turn down your heat at all. That is not what I'm saying. I'm just saying there's opportunities to find ways to do conservation, to programs like Mass Save. And things like, closing your drapes at night, for example, try to keep more heat in the house. Obviously limit how you open, close the doors at home. Depending what rooms you're in, you may close the door to a room depending on how your heating system works, because you want to, trap heat into parts of the house that you spend most time in.
Right. So, and folks should check out Quincy Community Action Programs. It has an energy assistance program that has a pretty generous threshold, an income threshold for qualification.
Yeah, and also the LIHEAP program at QCAP. So if you are a low-income individual family and you need some heating assistance, Quincy County Action Program does provide some heating assistance funds, particularly in terms of folks that are still using oil. But you should definitely check with them, see what programs are available. If you're in some hard times, there also is the low-income distribution rate, which can lower your distribution rate bill by around 10-ish percent, give or take, depending on the calculation on your situation. Something else to talk to QCAP about if you fall in the income category. State's unemployment rate is ticked up slightly to about 4%. My office has gotten more calls about people needing help on applying for unemployment the first time. So I'm aware that we're in this bump locally regarding people getting into unemployment assistance.
Interesting. I wonder what's causing that.
It could be seasonal.
True. Yeah, a lot of people, new year, new job. Yeah.
Yeah, new job. Seasonal help ends in many places. There might be. It was a fairly warm fall, so maybe seasonal help lasted a little bit longer than it normally does, because obviously a lot of the fall, summer, fall help ends close to get to Thanksgiving. There's also lottery till shops are stretched on dollars. I mean, we talk about inflation many times here, cost of doing business many times here. And of course, a lot of those costs are passed on to the customers. It doesn't matter the size of your business. And of course, the smaller the business, the bigger the cost pass through, because they're the ones that take a harder hit on the profit margins.
Yeah, right, exactly. And a lot of folks, a lot of retail stores at least hire just for the holidays.
Exactly. So maybe this is a little temporary situation, for the month of January, into the month of February. But I think once we get to what I say a tourist season, when we get to like May, unemployment numbers continue to keep ticking up into tourist season, there may be a little bit more going on here. Construction in general is actually slowing down just a bit, because the city of Boston is not building as much as they have under Mayor Wu's current proposals on the restrictions and what they can build and how much they can build and what they're going to build. Let's leave it at that. So it's encouraging more construction outside of Boston itself. And again, there's only so much space. Even Quincy, you see things being built, but you're not seeing, a 20-story building or, a 1-acre biotech complex, for example.
Yeah.
They're not, that's just not happening right now. It's just,
It's pretty much built out when it comes to that size of development, yeah.
that's exactly it. And, not to say there won't be some, I'm sure in Cambridge, they'll find another piece of space they'll just demolish and put up another science center or something like that. But between building out and just the cost of doing business, right? I mean, I'm aware that mortgage rates are somewhere between 6.8 and like 7.2%, depending what day you ask. It's the highest rates you've seen before the great financial crisis back in 08. And that has an impact, not necessarily just people buying homes, but also in construction.
Yep, absolutely. Also, since last we talked, Tacky, we have a new president. Did you watch
Yeah.
the
No, I will be honest, I've not seen every inauguration. I know it's every 4 years. I tend to actually skip the second one. Was that in
inauguration?
my life? Like, I didn't watch Clinton part two, Barack part two, now Trump part two, Bush part two. For some reason, I've actually never watched the second inauguration. I watched like the clips, and then that's it. The first inauguration, I've actually sat through the whole thing. It's just, I didn't really notice it till I was like, oh yeah, I never watched Obama 2 or Clinton 2 or W. I mean, it just wasn't, I've seen the show once.
That's right. Well, this one a little different because it was inside the Capitol because of the weather down there.
Yeah, the news clips show that. It's really kind of crazy how they crammed everybody in there. And of course, security is a big deal. And nowadays, especially after an assassination attempt twice, well, once, and most likely the second was as well. Of the president, you figure it'd be greater security level. I mean, I did catch glimpses of him at the Capital One Bank executive order signing show, because that's what it was. It was pure entertainment the way it was set up, the way he'd done this, right down to throwing pens in the crowd. But I mean, it was interesting how he, for a guy that was attempted murder twice, really was taking a high risk into just allowing people to get within 10 feet of them. I know there's metal detectors, I know that, but I mean, there's still always an opportunity where someone just wants to jump them, for example, or take a blunt object from somewhere nearby, like a chair or some item, like a full can of, well, they're probably willing to have cans of anything near him.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. I mean, look at the Reagan assassination attempts. It got right up and close to him with a gun.
Yeah, and that was pretty high security. It was a Cold War. After the Kennedy assassination, Secret Service have really upped up keeping people away from presidents over the years. Even now, I mean, I know that the assassination attempts were far distance, using essentially sniper type rifles. But still, I mean, there's a significant barrier, and I do agree there's a failure in so and Secret Service on the first attempt, but there's creating these massive perimeters. So we'll see if this continues with President Trump regarding the fact that he'll put himself close to a crowd to the point where highly questionable if it's a good idea.
And as you're well aware, there's been a lot of talk about the executive orders, especially around immigration policy and how that might impact Massachusetts. The governor is kind of trying to get ahead of that and saying, "Don't worry," basically.
Yeah, you should worry. I don't think we should pretend we shouldn't worry. I mean, it's a little complicated. We try to talk about this more than once here, and it's really like a good hour conversation. It's
Yeah,
not
it really is.
a simple conversation because I was talking to a friend about this last night, and it's very nuanced. It's not as simple as saying, we just get rid of X, we keep Y. And I have a lot of different thoughts on this in terms of like point of views. I mean, you got to get out of the way a couple of things, right? One is that there are hundreds of temporary visas in this country, ranging from what you know as an HB1, which is a work visa, which is a temporary visa, to refugee status visa, which a lot of folks here on refugee status, to folks on student visas, temporary, obviously tourist visas. There's a lot of visas, right? People tend to underestimate that. And when I was a kid, no joke, I mean, every time an Irish kid disappeared, everything said the same thing to my neighbors, that kid skipped out on his tourist visa. I'm a kid of the 80s, and this was quite a common thing that was said around me as a young child, which I had no clue what they were saying because you're 10 years old, so they were right.
So, in other
So
words, your visa expired, but you're staying in the country, and at that point, illegally.
yeah, it's not a new thing. I mean, as a 10-year-old child, I mean, that's what we hear from neighbors and other folks whenever, oh, there's Irish kids missing. Oh yeah, he skipped the visa, was the first thing everyone says. I mean, it's like expected. So I just like to say there's a degree of racism with discussions of eco undocumented aliens immigration. Because they talk about people generally, that have darker skin, brown skin, southern border, or Hispanics, right? But I mean, we're in Massachusetts. I mean, as a kid, we weren't looking for a Hispanic person skipping on the visa. We were looking for Irish kids. Very different mentality when I was a child. Now, this is obviously not the mentality we have today. It's very different. So, there's all these complexities there. You sort of fight internally within the administration, but whether to even allow a visa program, which Trump has decided to keep some of the visa programs, but he's looking to get rid of other ones, which is very confusing, which ones he's really talking about getting rid of. And then you have the issue of the border, which we all agree Biden was a complete and total disaster. President Biden just could not get his hands around it. We're suffering a migrant crisis because of their failure of actually trying to have a plan of how to address the issue. And a total failure. I mean, President Biden's total failure on that. So we'll see how President Trump tries to address that. Obviously, keeping people out is one thing, but getting people out is another. And a rough estimate is about 10 to 13 million people in this country are undocumented.
Undocumented is different than illegal, though, right?
Yes, if you're illegal, it means a judge declared you illegal. This is where it gets funny. So, for example, if a police officer gives you a traffic citation because you got pulled over, you're saying, well, that you did something illegal. It's not illegal until you pay it or you go to a court and challenge it, and the court says you did something illegal. So when you pay the citation, you basically admitted you committed a crime, right? Your citation itself is indication a cop is making an accusation, right? This is a very, I know it's very kind of like cutting hairs, but it's a very important hair to cut. You get a citation, you've been accused. By paying it, you've accepted the guilt. If you go challenge it, you're waiting for a judge to say you're guilty, which means now you've done something illegal. So I guess until you're actually brought before a judge or you admit to it and basically pay the civil fine. Same thing on a murder charge, right? You're accused. Notice me always very say it's accused. It is illegal to murder people. But you never hear that in the news. It is not illegal. It is illegal to murder people once you've been convicted of said murder. But it's wrong. It's against the law to kill people, which implies it's illegal because duh. But until you're actually convicted in a trial, or you plead guilty, you've done nothing illegal yet.
It's the legality term that is the deciding factor.
Yeah, and that's why it's so popular saying, oh, the illegal aliens or illegal immigrants, because it creates this image that they're automatically guilty. This is like very psychological thing, because I could say that about anybody on this call saying you are illegal. Why? You jaywalked. I promise you, everybody that's listening has jaywalked. You have done something illegal. You are now a criminal. And they're off at that idea because, you know, I didn't do anything illegal. No one saw me do it. I have a cop get me, right? It's that same legal principle that is kind of lost in the media conversation, and it's very much political bait for politicians. It's red meat for politicians, whether you're on the right side of the fence, where you just want to drum up this or incite anger in people or whatnot. But you think about your own day-to-day life. I promise all of you that, you know, you have at least jaywalked in Massachusetts, which is illegal despite what people think. Or, you know, perhaps, you know, you may have like just barely beat a red light. Or maybe you know, believe it or not, it's illegal to spit on the ground in Massachusetts. It's a tuberculosis thing, right? You just committed a civil crime, right? It happens. They're minor crimes, and, you know, really, you know,
Yeah,
unless
they're
you
not felonies, right?
get not felonies. And you can argue that distinction, but if you just want to argue the legality of what's legal and illegal, it is that kind of fine hair. So when a cop grabs you for jaywalking and gives a citation, you can challenge that, right? You go to court and challenge it. The criminal magistrate may find you guilty. Now you confirm you've done something illegal. You paid a fine. You admit that you did something illegal. You know, and then that's the guilt. So only a judge can determine the legality of a status of an individual, because there may be extraordinary circumstances associated. For example, human trafficking is one of the most terrible ones. So you're here illegally, whether your visa burn or you were brought in illegally, unless you're sex trafficked, which is a real thing. Sex trafficking is a very real thing in America, and they bring foreign women and boys and men, women, whatever, girls to sex trafficking in the United States, and they're here illegally, right? You know, in the sense that you all can say that they weren't here with full documentation, right? Somebody quite undocumented. But then you go before a judge, you know, the badly abused, malnutrition, you can go through the horror show. I won't have to describe this. You can imagine your own scenario. And what do you do now, right? And there is a temporary visa program for victims of these type of crimes in this country, as well as, you know, state does provide some legal assistance, as well as you know, humanitarian assistance for folks that have been sex trafficked, right? So, are they here illegally? Well, until a judge says so, they don't. But the judge could say that, well, they're here illegally, but not really, because they were brought here against their will. They were kidnapped and brought in for human trafficking. Did they willingly come to this country? There is no intent. It's illegal. Maybe they're here on false pretense. The people who brought them in here, which is also very common, which is the current Korean sex trade story that's in the Northeast Corridor from DC, New York, and Boston. You know, they were here under false pretense. They're brought in on the pretense they could get a working permit from their employer, and they're essentially kidnapped, held against the will, and proceeded to be sex trafficking. All right, you all tell me, you know, would you determine illegality there, or would you make the
Just
determination?
almost every case is individual and depending on the circumstances.
Oh, absolutely, right? I mean, it really is that simple. And then, you know, then I, you know, flip to the other side here, right? Most people don't realize, you know, that people that are refugees from Southeast Asia, Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam. There's normalization agreement between the United States and those three countries. The United States can deport any refugee that's not a U.S. citizen back to the country of origin for no reason, like no reason at all. And you know, every administration since normalization 20 years ago, about well, it was about 15 to 20, depending which country, has deported probably around 50 individuals that have committed criminal offense. That is a refugee of one of those three countries, and ship them back to the country of origin, of which those countries must take a Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos must take individuals the United States sent back to as part of normalization relations. It's the only countries that I'm aware of the United States has an agreement to have basically free ship out, so to speak, of folks back to those countries, even though you've not lived in the country for like 40 years or you came here as a baby. I have no idea what you're looking to get there, because it's a big racism here, where people under the perception that if you come from that country, you must automatically be a part of that country somehow.
Yeah.
You haven't been there since you were 3 years old. Trust me, you're not part of that country.
Yeah.
It is uniquely, it is a very uniquely thing that's brought upon Asian folks in particular, not other demographics. So, I have a fear that the Trump administration, they run into an issue regarding the deportation issues. No one cares who they are. People just like want numbers. There's going to be uptick in deportations of Vietnamese, Cambodians, and Laotian refugees. And we have a very good population of them here. There's a lot of them here. Will be deported even if they have no criminal record, because legally speaking, the U.S. government can't.
I see. Okay.
And this kind of rock up the numbers, because those countries must take them. It is not an option for those three countries not to accept these folks back. So you revoke their refugee status or permanent or the green cards, and then permanent residents, ship them back to those three countries,
Yeah.
and they have no legal standing actually, because this is a part of a treaty agreement between two countries. Plus, the U.S. can revoke your status, under Ohio law, which is this agreement
Yeah.
between these two
But,
treaties.
and that now that brings up the issue of this birthright citizenship discussion, where what if these folks, while they have been here, have had children here, born here in this country, by the Constitution, those children are citizens.
Well, most of those people have kids here, right? I actually
Okay.
know of an incident which I will not talk about because it's a private matter, of one of a constituent in Quincy that has actually this happened to in December. A person that's did a crime, did the time back as a younger individual when, quite honestly, they didn't know what was going on, did something very foolish, and cooperated with law enforcement because was doing stupid, as you guys can imagine, and as a result, paid the price, and then lived a clean, safe life ever since, with kids and jobs and all that stuff, and just kept out of trouble. And yeah, the Biden administration sent this individual back to Vietnam. The reality, it's not about political party, political philosophy. It's political convenience for whoever's in power.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen to a demographic in our country from Southeast Asia, because it's easy. It racks up the numbers. And I really think this is going to happen under the Trump administration, as they find out that not every country wants people back in their murders. And that's, I mean, people think other countries are stupid, this country. Like, other countries aren't stupid. They don't want murderers to come back. So, and it's also not their problem to commit a crime in the United States. Why is it somebody else's problem? I mean, we'll get back in a second. So birthright is actually guaranteed in the 14th Amendment of the Constitution that if you're born in the United States, it's a very kind of very simple statement that you are able to, any state, you're a citizen of the U.S., United States, and a citizen of the state you're born in. This has extended to U.S. territories. It was in the 14th Amendment because of the Dred Scott case. Dred Scott basically, in summary, said that slaves can never be U.S. citizens. Hence, children of slaves can never be U.S. citizens.
Interesting.
Dead stop.
Yeah.
It's that simple, because slaves are considered property, and property can't be people. People can't be citizens. They cannot be citizens because they're not people. So, post-Civil War, this legal doctrine holds logic that if you're a child of a slave, you cannot be a citizen because your mother and father were never people,
Wow.
which then extends indefinitely into the future generations.
Right.
The 14th Amendment actually has in there, and it's well documented out there and tried before the Supreme Court, more than a couple of times, that it is a very simple statement that birthright citizenship is that you're born in the United States, you're a citizen of the United States, and actually put it interestingly, and the state you're born in. Because you're
Okay.
in that state. In each, again, we live in federalism, right? You're actually a citizen of Massachusetts and you're a citizen of the United States, even though that, because of things like extradition, right? You saw this with the killer of UnitedHealthcare CEO, that guy, which I would not say his name, he doesn't deserve his name to be said. Had to get extradition from his state back to New York, right? From Pennsylvania, they get extradition. There is the citizenship right you have.
Yeah, well, there are states' rights, yeah.
It's funny when I say that, right? Because you commit a crime here, you flee to another state.
Right.
The state has to let you release you back into the custody of the state that committed the crime in, right? It's not something you don't see very often. It only makes news when it's sensational.
Yes,
It's
right.
very common to happen, but when it's sensational, you suddenly hear about it. A lot of people commit crimes across state lines. You know, not new, but sensationalism of a story will make it more apparent in tension. So what does that mean? It means that, if you read the plain letter of the Constitution, it is what it sounds like. One side is the United States, and in a state here, you're a U.S. citizen. It's really that simple, that statement. Now, can the president revoke that? No. Now, can you nuance it? Maybe. For example, you could try to make an argument the legal status of your parents may be relevant. May be relevant. So, if your legal status, your parents, is not U.S. citizens or permanent residents or whatever, you could try to start cutting this with a fine knife into little thin strips to create multiple categories of what's in and what's out. And that becomes an interesting category question because the first time this was tested, I want to say the case was the United States versus Nguyen Tuc. It's actually a Chinese case where they question, yeah, I know. You guys are all like, what do we mean? There's Chinese lawsuits? Yes, there's been Chinese lawsuits since the 19th century in this country, questioning whether or not his children could be U.S. citizens. And the answer was yes, they were born in U.S. soil. And why was it Chinese? Because Chinese, where you're, well, still is actually in the current political environment, your choice du jour of non-white folk to kick the crap out of.
No, interesting.
Because they're so foreign appearance West Coast. So there are a ton of lawsuits from Chinese folks trying to demonstrate their legal status. And this is one of those wins for actually any immigrant by a Chinese lawsuit on children of Chinese couples can or are U.S. citizens by being born in the United States. So, little trivia people don't realize. So the question is, we're going to try to nuance it. Should we split the hairs, split the paper up to say we're going to create categories and these can be birthright, these cannot be? The Trump administration will probably start to do things like that and then try to ship the U.S. Supreme Court because in the case of the Chinese family, the parents were citizens. Well, correction, were legal residents. Now, you got to remember, in the 19th century, not everybody got a permit. There was no such thing as green cards in the 19th century. Most people just came in. This whole Ellis Island thing is a bit of a myth. It's a lovely story, but not reality. Most people didn't come through New York or San Francisco. They actually came in any way they could. And you can only, I mean, we're talking about the 19th century. It's not like we're talking about massive amount of like entry points and just get out of like jump off the boat and swim over. I mean, it's different time, right? You didn't have all these like monitors, right? But the distinction there is that if you're from Asia, and Chinese being the most popular migrant worker, next to Japanese, you needed papers to prove you're allowed to be in the United States. It was the only demographic. No Europeans in the 19th century had to do with this. And Mexico is an interesting conversation with Spaniards, so we'll leave that aside. But in the 19th century, not the 20th, 19th century, the only individuals that needed to have papers showing they have a status here are people from Asia.
I did not know that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So this idea of permanent residency, or demonstrated legality of your status in the United States in the 19th century is kind of a squishy thing. So if you come from a European country, there was not really a question mark if you were supposed to be there. People didn't ask for papers.
Interesting.
Social Security cards didn't exist. Social Security is a 20th century invention.
Yes, 1930s, I think. What was it? FDR, right?
Yeah, those identifications exist. Income taxes really only applied to the uber wealthy, not to the common man, because this country is paid on excise taxes, mainly alcohol, tobacco, particularly guns. Those are the three things, the excise tax. And of course, the government was to be smaller. We don't have a, there was no ginormous military. There was no state services. There was very limited to foreign affairs issues, very little domestic services overall, other than what's allowed in the Constitution. So the budgets were tiny relative to today at all. So things like tariffs was a portion of of those tiny budgets, right? And the state budgets, on the other hands, were large because the state did all the services. The federal government didn't do anything. It was a fake state, local domestic service run by states in the 19th century. Of course, not all states being equal. So why do I bring this up? Because there's a lot of oversimplification of these issues regarding immigration, who people are, and the so-called legal statuses. And we as individuals listening and talking here are making judgment calls that, frankly, it's just a judgment call of an opinion. And that's all you have. And mine is an opinion too, because I told you what the legalities are. My or your decision what the legalities are. That is up to a court of court of law to decide what legalities are. So, everything Oliver says here is an opinion to a court says otherwise. That's what deportation criminals. I tend to lean on the side of the victims of the crime. I don't like criminals. I don't think anyone does. But victims of crimes deserve justice. And this is the part of conversations is being left out. So your kid's been raped and murdered by undocumented. And the solution is to send this person back to a country of origin, assuming that country wants them. Very good question. And they go, and if they say they do, let's say this provide that the Trump scenario is correct, that they will take these people back. They're the murderers. Well, they get off scot-free, go home, and nothing has ever happened. And you, as a victim of a murdered child, will stand there and realize that this person just basically got a free ticket home and is going to live their normal life normally without ever facing American justice. So your idea is American justice deportation for the point of getting freedom? Not a bad deal for a murderer. And you're all like scratching your heads now, probably thinking, oh, we just punished someone. No, you just basically made victims in the United States of violent crimes even worse victims because that individual you sent back to their home country is enjoying a quiet life.
Yeah, I guess the assumption is they'll be punished there in their home country, but that's not always the case.
It's never the case. That didn't, we're not, everyone thinks everyone's like the United States. If you commit, for example, sex trafficking in another country and you're a US citizen, you will be brought back and tried for a crime in another country. It is part of federal law. Not necessarily in other countries.
I see.
Right? Why would they? It's their expense to put the person in prison for a victim that's not their citizen.
Yeah, true, true.
Right? So, I mean, I get it. But if you're a person that's been victimized, you got no justice under this proposal. And that's assuming they take them back. Now, if the country of origin doesn't want them back, you can't just drop them off. What do you just drop them off, like throw them off the side of a boat next to a country and see what happens? I mean, that's not how it works. So who's going to make out the best is private prisons.
Yes.
So what's going to happen is that there's insufficient detention areas. The federal government will hire the private prison companies to create detention centers for these folks they're trying to deport, whether they're here as a try to deport a criminal convicted of a crime, person who committed a crime but not convicted yet, the whole due process issue there, and then or people who have done nothing wrong that be here without papers and also deport, and they could be all in the same space in a private prison, waiting for the federal government to decide where to send them if the country doesn't want them back.
I never heard of a private prison.
Oh no, those have been around a while. It's like all through like the American Southwest. I mean, remember Bill Weld tried to do that? He tried to ship a bunch of prisoners to a private prison in like Pennsylvania.
No, I don't remember that.
Oh yeah. This was a thing. People forget. I mean, Weld had like this brilliant idea to save money in the prison system by shipping people out.
What's a private prison? I never heard of a private prison.
It's what it sounds like. It's a prison that's owned by a private company that you basically pay for them to hold prisoners.
Really? News to me.
Yeah, it's like a quote unquote cost savings for the government. But is it? I mean,
Are they in any in Massachusetts?
no,
No.
they're all in basically places that have a lot of empty space where you can't get to them.
Oh, okay.
It's not
And
like a prison.
who they run by?
Oh, they're I have to look it up. Do you want me to look them up? I'll tell you.
No, I never heard of them. Private prison, like is this a prison company, like prison.com?
Let me go to my phone. Hang on.
Okay.
Private prison companies. Yeah, actually, the funny trivia is that the stock went like crazy ass when Trump got elected because they're anticipating a lot of work. CoreCivic, Corrections Corporation of America, they own and lease jail, prisons, and reentry centers. GEO Group, also known as the Wanko Hurt Securities, LaSalle Corrections, Management Training Corporation, Community Education Centers. Is another corporation name. Yeah, there's quite a few of them. Let's see, the biggest one is CoreCivic. They have 65 facilities, give or take, for federal and state detention. They have 90,000 beds over 19 states in the District of Columbia. The valuation of the company is some in the area of a couple billion dollars.
This
It's a
is All news to me, Decade. So who determines, the prisoners' rights in these private prisons, and who regulates them, or just up to the companies?
That's a you're a better you want to be a better attorney than I am trying to understand this. It's half a joke because if you're not in custody of the United States, it's custody of the government. Your civil rights are kind of tied to it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's
So
what I'm
it's a
thinking
little bit
about.
unclear. The answer should be yes, because even though it's a private prison, your civil rights should be the same as if you're a in a government facility because it's.
Oh.
But the over supervision oversight is not there because it's not like there's a government employee standing at the private prison door.
Right. But your prison sentence has been handed down by a court, right? By a judge, overseen by the state or federal government.
But the corrections facility in each state determines how to what prison, how to manage your prison arrangements.
Okay, interesting. Huh. So in the sentencing portion of your trial, it doesn't specify what prison you go to. Huh.
Yeah, I mean, it's up to the corrections facility to decide, how to manage you next and where you're going to go, unless the judge has very specific orders.
Yeah.
Generally, the judge doesn't want to do micromanagement like that. It's not
Interesting.
like a judge has like a spreadsheet in front of him, like where's a bed available.
Huh. I never heard of the stacking. Not in my life. This is new.
Yeah, like I said, I remember Bill Weld. I don't know if I can find an archive in an article. I actually tried this. It didn't go over well with people here.
I wouldn't think. Yeah, I wouldn't
Because
think.
your loved one's being shipped to like Arizona or something, right?
Right.
Like generally, unfortunately, one of the drawbacks of people in prison is that you gotta make a trip to visit your loved one in prison. And your loved one's now in Arizona because Bill Weld wanted to save money at the time.
Right. And are prisoners in private prisons allowed to see their attorneys
No, you still have, yeah, you obviously still have your basic legal rights.
Okay.
But in terms of how you're treated, well, it's not a government prison, right? There's no government oversight. I
Right.
mean, unless you demand that you put up someone from the government inside your prison.
Right. Wow. Okay. See the things we learn on Tacky Talk here, I'm telling you.
Yeah, you're going to see them make a ton of money on federal contracts now on this deportation issue because I think you're learning a lesson for the first time. You can't put kids in cages, quote unquote. I mean, this was the thing at the time, which separation of families. So I suspect there's going to be some, they're probably going to change how they do this because, it was just grotesque watching children in penned up areas. They're like toddlers. I mean, it's just awful. So, I'm sure they're going to do it differently this time, but it's going to involve spending a lot of federal taxpayer dollars for detention areas, where they're trying to figure out how do you get the country of origin to take that individual back. And there was like a serial killer or something like that. Do you actually put them in the private prison with like non-dangerous people who are now going to be victims of this sick individual? And think some common sense for people, or the prison of common sense. Well, let's use some common sense. I'm a leader of a country, and the U.S. says I want you to take back this mass murderer. Would common sense say yes? If you say yes, then clearly let's rediscuss what your definition of common sense is.
Right.
So I suspect if Trump's intending to do that, he's going to have to threaten them, which probably is going to work. Or they're going to have to pay them. And this will cost you guys more money too as taxpayers, because you're not going to hear that story because you got to incentivize. Will you take this mass murder off our hands? And if you're like that country, like looking at us, like, what are you talking about? And then it's like, now what? Right? What's my incentive to take this murderer off? Because you're going to let this crazy guy loose in my country? Because I can't put him in prison. He's does no crime. He's done no crime in my country.
Right.
It's like people who commit crimes in like France come to the United States running around until the French tell us the person committed a crime. And how do you know? It's like, undocumented Irish terrorists. There are real these are real, right? In Massachusetts at one time, there are a lot of undocumented Irish who were actually terrorists. Which they U.S. government helped wrangle up to bring back to justice once the U.S. government knew who they were, right? I mean, you don't know who they are. I mean, then what good is it?
Wow.
So I mean, this is a little more complex. So between victims, the victims of a crime, which probably will never get justice, the challenges of deporting to someone back to a country of origin, which has no incentive to do so. Why would you let of someone that didn't commit a crime in your country, that did crime in your country, that's wicked dangerous back in your country. And if they get accepted out of, and accepted back into that country, obviously the victims have no justice. Then you have detention areas to hold not just these people that want to deport that great crimes, because you all think it's a punishment to do that. Well, not for everybody, depends on the criminal. Now they're going to be detained somewhere along with non-dangerous undocumented, and also Cambodians, Laotians, Vietnamese who are here legally, probably done nothing wrong, will also get deported just to rack up the numbers of deportation to look like they deported people.
Hey, okay, we've really gone down the rabbit hole here, but it's just fascinating to talk about. But before we run out of time, Jackie, I want to talk about some state issues, namely the $62 billion budget the governor unveiled this week.
Yeah, it's a conservative budget. It's under 3% growth. I think it's like 2.6. I'm trying to
Yeah,
wrap
that
that
sounds
up.
right. Yeah.
The governor's trying to find some new dollars. I'm kind of nervous about this whole sugar tax. I'm like, really?
Taxing candy, yes.
Yeah, I kind of get it. I mean, the
It's only
logic,
25 million. I mean, it hardly seems worth it.
it hardly seems worth it. I agree. It's basically the equivalent of a sales tax holiday. Sales tax holiday costs us between 35 and 40 million now, give or take. So sales tax holiday actually puts a dent in our budget, but it's, you know, between 35 and 40 million. I know it sounds funny when you say that, but it really is like getting $62 billion.
Right.
Sales tax holiday is basically slightly bigger than revenue generated by the sugar tax. The logic is that if you buy stuff in grocery stores, there's no tax because groceries are not taxed in Massachusetts. That's not the case all over the world, by the way. People do tax groceries depending where you are, what state and what country, not just the Massachusetts thing. If I've been surprised by getting taxed on groceries when I leave this country, leave the United States before. I mean, leave Massachusetts. I go
Oh
somewhere.
yeah. Oh yeah.
What do you mean there's a tax on my candy? So it does actually happen in other states. But the logic is that if you buy confections at a bakery, they're subject to the meals tax.
Ah, okay.
So why aren't candy in stores taxed? Because it's a packaged good, not a baked good, right?
Right.
It's different. It's a retail product that's prepackaged. But if you buy something in an individual level at like a gas station, it's not the same as buying a grocery. It's really crazy. So I'm having a hard time seeing this going really well with constituents. No one likes to get taxed anyway. But if you're
Right.
going to try to explain the fine line between buying stuff at a bakery versus buying a candy bar at a supermarket, I don't think it's going to fly well with
Well, I think
constituents.
it's news to people that bakery goods are taxed. I didn't realize that.
It's a meals tax.
Yeah.
It's a meals tax. It's not a sales tax. It's a meals tax. You buy baked goods at a bakery, it's a meals tax.
Right. Yeah.
So, no, this I have a hard time seeing this flying well with constituents. I really do. I really have a hard time seeing that. The MBTA is the big one, as we've talked many times. I mean, it's already been broadcast in the news more than once that we use the millionaire's tax to big the hole up. It's going to be like two-thirds plus of the millionaire's tax to plug the hole into T.
Yeah, it's like, what, $700 million, I think.
Yeah, this was one time $300 million some decades ago. Now it's 700, right? So no, we're at that stage. And a more permanent solution needs to be done regarding the formula of funding for the T. T's budget's approximately $3 billion. And you know, it's also not full trains. Like the commuter rails on the South Shore do not have maximum capacity on them. That's lost money. It's not just about the red line and the trains and the buses. You know, if commuters aren't full, that actually hurts the bottom line too.
Right. Yeah, because it's costing the same to run them full or not. Yeah.
Correct. The cost of infrastructure and running the system is going to be identical no matter who's on the train. You have no people on it, it's still going to cost the same amount of money if you have 100 people on it.
Right.
So it's like an airplane. You know, flying a plane, you know, yeah, it uses more fuel, you put more people on it, but it's a,
But you're making more money at the same time. Yeah.
yeah, you're paying for it a fuel. I mean, so you know that's the big part of the budget too. Obviously, you saw the news that I'm trying to fight these broker fees that are sprung onto renters unsuspectingly with no contractual agreement between the broker and the renter. So the governor's office actually adopted the language that we wrote in committee, much to our happiness and surprise. They actually took something that was a product of my committee, my staff and I, and put it into the budget. Sometimes they don't do that. They come up with brilliant ideas on their own. And then we come running in and say, we're doing 6 years of research. This is how you're supposed to do it. So
Congratulations, Deck. Very good.
yeah, well actually we did that with At one time, we changed a lot this year regarding student loans and licenses. So if you have a student loan default, you can have your license suspended.
Okay.
A professional license, not driver's
Yep.
license. The problem is that you don't have a professional license, you can't make money, so you can pay your student loan.
Yeah, it's a catch 22 for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, so we this year we lifted that punishment, so to speak. I remember when we first tried to do this 4 years ago, not to beat up another committee, so we made those things nameless. But another committee got ahead of us on this, and we were just trying to clean up to make sure we got it right. They actually had it; they did it only half correctly, and then we actually had to inform the speaker's office that this is only half correct, and here's the reason that we've been working on it longer than the committee that had it prior to us because of a directional failure of the clerk's office of where to set a bill. So, yes, folks, we're human in the legislature, and mistakes happen, and hopefully someone else will catch a mistake and fix it. As an example, one that that finally became law, but it was a little bit of a bump in the road where
Yeah.
the committee was doing the research and we came to the conclusion this is how it's supposed to work, and we confirmed it we were right. So there's that. What else? So the budget, also has a lot of housing stuff. The thing that's concerning in the globe, again, I took this out of the globe, is the RAF program. This is a transitional housing program that's heavily used. She wants to extend the time span of the current usage from 1 year to 2 years, but not change the amount of money.
Oh, you can't do that. That's not going to work.
It's not going to work. They're going to try to save like $4 million by stretching the same amount of money from 1 year to 2 years, like $7 grand on housing transitional assistance for certain families. I think you can all see the problem here. I shouldn't have to explain simple math like this, right?
Right.
That's going to run into some problems with the legislature, particularly focused for our constituency, my constituency, our neighbors and friends here in Quincy. The RAF program is extremely important for Quincy residents.
Interesting. Okay.
You don't, everyone, trust me, you all have neighbors and friends who not tell you their problems. These programs help them out, so you never knew they had a problem. So then you have the shelter issue, which continues to be a major controversy. I just saw a letter in my email before getting on to you that the chair Ways and Means is looking for greater details on very much vagueness on what the government was talking about. She mentioned this briefly in her state address. She's trying to address through the budget, and she also asked for $470 million in the supplemental budget, which we're kind of hesitating, as you can tell by the way that Ways and Means sent a letter to the governor's folks asking for a full explanation of what's going on here with this money. I've been critical. You've heard me be critical about this. The legislature's been very critical. The public's been critical. You've been critical. I mean, everybody's critical of this. And again, back to the failure of the federal government. But something's going on here. And I want to remind folks, I mean, veterans have like veterans homeless services. They already have a separate service. I mean, people like love these red herrings, right? Oh, you're denying a veteran service. No, if you go down State Street in Boston, there's a veterans homeless service center right there. Right? We have veteran services in Quincy. Right? People love, again, red meat bait, right? But in terms of prioritizing residents, the governor's already prioritized residents. Now they want to do like document checks that we've already done on the migrant welcome centers. We're not sure where she's going here. So we're very concerned by the lack of details that they submitted through the budget. And Ways and Means is now actually actively, for lack of term, investigating. But what are you trying to tell us? We need more of an explanation. So stay tuned. Well, it's not only a migrant issue. Unemployment's going up. So just the shelter program in general is being questioned. And again, I mean, I tell you, very few people listen to me have ever seen a child sleeping on the street. They'll get ready. Depending on how the government wants to do this, you will see children sleeping on the street.
Hope that doesn't happen. No.
Hope it doesn't. But again, if you go to other states and other countries, you do see it. You
Yeah.
just never notice it because they treat homeless people as they're invisible. I'm serious. We do. You'll walk by people and never see them. It's just how we are. And you probably be in other states of the country and walk by homeless people and never see them. Think about it, people. Just think about it for a second, right? It's not accusation, it's human behavior. So But we'll see again. We'll have more chats about this down the road as we get closer and closer to budget debate as we start to get more details.
Okay. Yeah, I'm guessing no committee assignments yet.
No, there's no rules debate still. I'm waiting
Okay.
for them to schedule that. So the two big items we have pending for us in the former session is this rules debate, so it establishes rules. And the second one is the supplemental budget, which is going to include things like this weekend. Snow removal money is actually part of supplemental budget because we don't know how much snow is going to be. And we generally budget like $20, $40 million in the main budget. But if it actually does snow, we actually don't know how much it costs. So we always set aside reserve money, kind of like hanging out. If it doesn't snow, great. Taxpayers save a couple of bucks. If it does snow and it snows horribly, and don't forget, we do the whole state, not just Eastern Mass. So if you hear like 24 inches in the Berkshires, well, guess who's plowing that? It's state. Obviously, it impacts the supplemental budget. So those are two big pending items right now. We have rules debate and supplemental budget. Waiting to see where they are. And then we'll see what happens next. So we're a bit of a holding pattern right now.
Okay. All righty. But reach out to you anyway, right?
So I am we are actually staffed at the State House in room 42. I'm still there in the 617-722-2370. 617-722-2370 is the phone number. Tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. You can send me an email. I do check my emails. We do constituent calls first before we get to policy matters. I do understand people want to have me co-sponsor stuff, and I'm sure you're gonna be angry about things you read in the Globe, but we actually do look at what you send me, so we are aware of it. And obviously, it was very urgent. We very much encourage you to call us because waiting for an email response, if it's an urgent matter of constituent report, please definitely call direct. We have State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook. You can see my comings and goings. At Tacky Chan at Twitter/X, same thing. You can see my comings and goings. We have tackychin.org, the resource page, a contact page. You can find me as well. We have malegislature.gov, state website. You can find a bill faster. You can talk to me. So you can do the searches there. Of course, we are with Joe every week or two, as time allows. Say hello, and if you've got a question, give it to Joe. He'll ask it. And obviously, check with him also in the morning in his daily podcast to get some local news and some briefs going around the world.
Appreciate it, Techie. It's gonna be a cold one, so stay warm. We'll see you next week.
You too. Be well.